To give you a better sense of how Keegan's stages show up, we're going to look at intimate relationships, and in particular, we're going to look at the dynamics around sex as they show up in second order of consciousness, third order, and fourth order. Or what we've been covering as the imperial mind, the socialized mind, and the self-authoring mind. To give you a time sense, the duration of this is going to be about 20 minutes. So one of the frames that I use to describe third order or the socialized mind's relationship to sex is often comfort sex. Now, comfort sex is essentially finding a safe zone, a zone of sexual relating that's comfortable. And I just want to preface this as this is an actual advancement. This is a tremendous developmental achievement, in particular for the adolescent mind and for the young adult mind, where sex doesn't necessarily have to be something that's intensely ridden with anxiety and uncertainty. We can start to become more comfortable with our own sexuality, as well as being comfortable being seen by another person. Now, the reason why comfort sex occurs is because the socialized mind, in particular around intimate relationships, presumes that we actually share the same mind. And because of that assumption, and because we actually do tend to conform to each other's expectations in a pretty rigorous way, we are able to erase diversity and difference. This lack of diversity and differing opinions actually helps lower anxiety. But what ends up happening around comfort sex is that we assume that we're supposed to be turned on and aroused by the same things. We're supposed to want the same kind of sex. And this is, of course, true. Two partners are going to want some similar dynamics around sex. This is only partially true, though. We'll unpack how that difference shows up in just a few minutes. But this assumption that we share the same mind, that we share the same desires and expectations, overlooks the fact that there's always a high and low desire partner in every situation. Not just sex, but in every situation. Presumably, somebody has a little bit more desire at least, or a little bit less desire for something. So we actually aren't the same, even though we assume to be the same in third order. So another dynamic that's important is the assumption that we share the same mind holds some deep-rooted relational dynamics. And the first is that we assume that it is our partner's responsibility to take care of our own anxiety around sex. So what that means is that partners are both being regulated by each other, right? And so we might even say that they're codependent on one another. And this oftentimes, especially in therapists who have a fourth order orientation, they often pathologize this codependent relationship. And just to be very clear, codependency, this mutual reinforcement of each other, this reflected sense of self that I need you to be okay for me to be okay, it's a essential feature of third order consciousness, and it's not pathological. Now, we might be able to create an argument that it's pathological later on in adulthood, that you should have outgrown this. But the truth of the matter is there's many adults that never grow past third order consciousness. And that's not a pathology per se. It's limiting for what they can do in their life, for sure, but it's not a pathology in the conventional or traditional sense of the term. It's developmental. Codependency is a developmental achievement. It's not a pathological way of relating. So we can see what tends to happen when we get stuck in only a third order relationship, is that we tend to create a often unspoken agreement about what kinds of things we want to have happening in our bedroom, what kinds of sex we want to be having, what kinds of energy are allowed to be played with and which ones aren't, and what kinds of positions and which ones are off limits. And this all gets negotiated based on the anxiety in ourselves and the anxiety in our partner. It's usually an unspoken kind of, we sense, the third order mind can sense into where are we playing inside of the box and when do we kind of start stepping outside of it. And we avoid disturbing our partners. And we reprimand or covertly reprimand our partners for stepping outside of our own comfort zone. So this is all great. This is, again, a developmental achievement. But as you are likely seeing, this is also incredibly limited. And the consequence of this is, as a long-term strategy, is that we lose desire. We lose passion, we lose interest, because it becomes very routine, very predictable, and sex, our desire is to encounter some novel, exciting diversity, which brings us to the necessity for this fourth order consciousness, or what we've been calling the self-authoring mind. So, while in third order, we're often putting on socialized masks, socialized expectations, more practiced, controlled presentations of ourself, fourth order has a much more confident ability to start putting down the conventional roles and start putting down the conventional ways of being around intimacy and sex. And there's now a confidence that you can actually play with being more provocative, more seen in a direct and sincere way in your nakedness. And as a result, pleasure and intimacy tend to increase dramatically. So the first piece that we'll look at here is that it gives you an opportunity to finally take turns. So fourth order sexing, if you will, enables us to take turns in a very conscious and intentional way. And this is usually done with clear communication. Okay, honey, I'm going to do this. You know, I'm going to participate with this particular sexual energy. All right. What do you think? Right, and the partner might say no or might say yes, but we're starting to pick up this capacity to take turns, which means that you get to look into your own unique desire, your own special resonance of what really turns you on and what really is going to evoke the most pleasure for you. And you get to experiment with bringing that and leading that into the sexual dynamic. And in that sense, your partner then follows. Your partner then follows you into that dynamic and explores for themselves what it's like. And it might be tremendously anxiety provoking. It also might be shockingly arousing. Oh, I didn't realize I was going to enjoy that, but I did. Or, you know what, that really pushed my edges, and that was pretty terrifying, and I'm okay. And then we take turns. The partner then leads, gets an opportunity to create a scenario, a situation, invite you into a sexual dynamic that is led by them, that you then follow. And this acknowledges that we're actually two very different people. We have different needs, different desires, different fantasies, different wishes, different scenarios, different energetics that need to be brought to life. And this, generally speaking, increases the amount of pleasure that we have. And it also increases the intimacy that we can experience with ourselves, as well as the intimacy that we can encounter in our partners. So we can think of that comfort zone. We can still have comfort sex. That might totally happen frequently. But we can also explore outside of that, and it's not as risky. It's not as terrifying. It's not as provocative or anxiety-provoking in a way that we simply are unwilling to go there. Part of the socialized mind's limitation is that we're both agreeing that we don't want to experience our own anxiety. And that dramatically changes in fourth order, right? So in the self-authoring, it is very clear you are responsible to confront and engage your own anxiety. And your own anxiety is a form of distinctness, because anxiety is not separate from aliveness. It perhaps is the same energetic, just turned up. The volume has been turned up to a degree that it becomes more provocative and enlivening and awakening and frightening in some ways. So to close, I'll just say that intimacy at the third order is built upon, it rests inside of this assumption that we have the same mind, that we share the same ideas, that we share the same values, that we want the same things, and that we, in many ways, we are the same things. Fourth order, the self-authoring mind's orientation towards intimacy rests firmly upon distinctness, right? And my favorite articulation of distinctness as it pertains to sex and relationships is from David Snarch, with the concept that you are going to get closer and more distinct, where in the third order you get closer and more similar, and the closer you get to your partner, the differences get erased and ignored in many ways, whereas in fourth order, the closeness actually amplifies. The closer you get, the more you understand your distinctness, the more your distinctness is revealed to you. And this process of getting closer and more distinct through sex is perhaps one of the clearest articulations of the self-authoring mind as it pertains to sex. And this can be a incredibly enlivening practice to start to work with in terms of taking turns and leading and following and starting to play with the energetic continuum that's present. And so just to talk a few dynamics around relationships as it relates to your biology, there's at least three kinds of desire that's going on here. And the first is lust. You know, and it's purely driven by testosterone and estrogen. Lust, that primal root drive to have sex. This is like the most basic and root way. But as we know, there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty and anxiety around that energy. It's so creative. It's so provocative. It's so powerful. And that power brings with it tremendous anxiety, because we can get hurt really deeply with this energy. And we can also be catapulted into the divine by this energy. The sexual raw energy is so immensely powerful. The second is infatuation. And infatuation, we really see it as a function of dopamine. Now, infatuation, you're probably familiar with it. When you first fall in love with somebody, there's an incredibly infatuating period. It's really intense. And literally the sight or thought of your partner in this stage provides a tremendous release of dopamine to the brain. And there's actually even research that was conducted around different stages of relationship. And in this infatuation phase, just the sight of your lover's picture, not even them in person, but if they just showed you a picture of this person who you are infatuated with, the risk assessment parts of the brain went dark. There's no more activity in the risk assessment parts of the brain. So infatuation, it turns off certain parts of the brain as a means of drawing us into this infatuated, erotic dynamic. And it appears that perhaps its sole function is to get you to have sex regardless of the consequences. Procreate, procreate, procreate. And but this is another facet of sexual dynamics, is this infatuation phase of relating. The third piece that always shows up is bonding. And bonding is mediated by oxytocin. And bonding tends to really thrive in the third order consciousness. Right? So once we can intrinsically value somebody else in our life, they're no longer just an extrinsic thing to help us get our needs met, but they intrinsically matter to us, and we would take care of them as if we are taking care of ourselves. That kind of mutuality is embedded in, and we find its robust expression really starting to show up in third order in the socialized mind. And this is incredibly important for relationships. But as you know, bonding and becoming more same and really taking care of each other, it tends to remove out some of the more erotic, provocative dimensions around sex. In particular, that lust, that root, basic, powerful drive for sex tends to get only expressed in these very socialized ways, in this kind of agreed upon container, and that's the only place it happens. So in a way, we lose that lust. And as the relationship goes on, we lose the infatuation. And what's left, hopefully, is a really, really beautiful bond. But we've lost things. Let's not pretend like that hasn't happened. And third order does not do a very good job of including lust and infatuation back into the dynamic. And it's actually a necessary integration that the body mind appears to want to grow towards. And that's what shows up in fourth order relationships and fourth order sexing, where we finally see an ability to still maintain those bonds, to still nurture this deep mutuality that we love and care for each other and want to support each other in very profound ways. Yet at the same time, we also want to start to challenge each other in pretty profound ways. We want to actually knock our partners off balance. And we want our partners to kind of knock us off balance as a means for us to learn and to grow and to bring in more provocative and more enlivening dynamics. And this again enables us to take these more raw, non-socialized parts of sexuality and invite them into the relationship. And that can transmute and transform the sexual dynamics in countless ways.